Mitch, we're now after the midterms, and the Democrats, of course, took the House, and they lost a couple of seats in the Senate. Did anything surprise you about this election, or was it basically went according to plan? And most pundits said it was, kind of a victory for Trump a bit in the Senate, and the victory wasn't so great in the House. And on the other hand, people said at least the Democrats took the House. They didn't lose that many seats in the Senate. Was it basically a break-even type of affair? Did anyone come out the winner?
Well, as usual, this is a kind of an election where both sides will spin some form of victory and some form of defeat. Both sides are now going to look towards 2020, towards a presidential election. The interesting thing is that, now it looks like the Republicans and President Trump will have to try and work together in some kind of bipartisan way to get things done. If they decide not to do that, then they'll be at loggerheads on a number of different issues. What I think is the most amazing result of the election is that I actually heard a press conference of President Trump where he said to, he congratulated Nancy Pelosi on a victory, on a job well done. That's quite out of character. And is that going to be lead to, a kind of new deal in Washington, if you will? That's how I think the Republicans and Democrats will spin it. I think one of the losers of this election is the state of Israel, who certainly came in a partisan way, has become in a partisan way since Netanyahu has tweeted his support for building a wall in a foreign country, the U.S., between the U.S. and Mexico. Since he was quite quiet on Charlottesville, but yet very vocal, sending ministers on Pittsburgh, and in fact the only public official to accompany Trump was the Israeli ambassador. So we're seeing a shift in the Democratic Party, especially among the young people, and a lot of people coming in that support for Israel is not given, and partially we have ourselves to blame.
Okay. I want to pick up on the, again, that Israeli take. The idea that basically Orthodox American Jews and Netanyahu are putting all their, have put all their eggs in one basket and in effect kind of are abandoning the Democratic Party. That seems to be potentially dangerous for the state of Israel. That's what you're saying, basically.
Yeah, well, I think for a while Israel has put its Easter eggs in the evangelical basket, if you will. People that we feel most comfortable with, and I would call them the low-hanging fruit, the people that are going to be supportive of Israel. And it's not just Israel that makes it so easy, it's that they don't criticize the settlements. They actually see a benefit to Jews settling in Judea and Samaria, and that's very easy. So we don't. Israel doesn't concentrate on telling the other story about a liberal democracy, about being open to all types of people, all types of races, religions, sexual orientations. We don't tell that story because we're not so interested in it. We're interested more in the core base of evangelicals and Republicans. And I think we've neglected the Democratic Party and people in it for a while, and certainly going in a way that looks partisan with President Trump and on some of the internal issues, which we have no business being involved in, that we will pay a price in the short run, but definitely in the long run.
Shimon, I want to pick up on what Mitch is saying. It seems that I guess I'm dating myself, but following American politics as a kid in Canada, the Jews voted Democratic. They voted Democratic like other immigrant groups. The Democrats, at least in the North for, and in most of the United States, represented the party of progress, the party of equality, the party of immigrants. And now you find that a significant percentage of American Jews, centrist Orthodox, modern Orthodox, Haredi Jews, identify very strongly with the Republican Party, not only in Israel. What do you, I mean, people can, I'm sure, have written or are going to write doctorates on it, but if you had to just give a quick take, what pushed them there in the first place? Why, and why is there such a strong identification now among certain sectors of the Jewish population with the Republicans?
Look, it's complicated. It's sort of cooked over decades. In your question, I think there's an implication of what the answer might be. We're no longer a community of immigrants. We're third and fourth generation. I have a great father who was born in New York in 1899. So we've been there a long time, and I think we've moved away from the values that my parents certainly had. You know, they were big Roosevelt fans. My mother remembers when Roosevelt passed away and how she cried and her family cried. And I think now they identify with Republican values of hanging on to your money and making more money. And I think, look, I think the question of why anyone in their right mind would be supportive of Donald Trump is a very difficult question to answer. He's a very strange person, obviously narcissistic, thuggish. It's difficult to listen to him, and yet millions and millions of people love him. So I think it's a fair question to ask of any population. You know, why are they with Trump?
Right.
And the aspirational aspect of people who are not even close to being millionaires and billionaires, but they sort of identify with this guy who's as dumb as they are, but he's a billionaire, is a psychological dynamic, I think, is one of the reasons. They like it that he's not intelligent. They like it that he's not polished. They like it that he's thuggish. There's also a whole something about the thanatos about it, the urge to destroy, the urge to be subversive, to be perverse. That's difficult to understand, but I think, and I know, I guess I'd lose the argument, not that there's an argument taking place here, but whoever mentions Hitler or Nazis first automatically loses the argument, so I lost. But you look at Hitler's speeches and you say, how could German people who are supposed to be, you know, the Yankees, German, right? And they're supposed to be calm and serious and buttoned down, and this guy is screaming and spitting and clutching at his throat. The guy's nuts. And they voted him in. And I think there's a release of some very dark urges that took place there. And I think it's the same thing in America. And I think it's just that American Jews, Orthodox American Jews, who are supposed to be buttoning down their dark urges, are enjoying it. I mean, this was a stab at very amateurish social psychology. I don't understand it exactly.
But your basic answer is that, which I think is fair enough, that we used to think perhaps that Jews were somehow different. They were more prescient. They were more intelligent, more discerning, and they become Americans. That would be a fair way of putting it. I mean, if 43% of the American population think that Donald Trump is a good president or in favor of him, so they're not so far out of the loop. It's just basically saying they've in effect taken on, they become Americans. And they're just like anyone else.
The interesting thing is that that's truer about very traditional Jews and less true about untraditional Jews. That's the irony, right, or the difficulty.
Well, people would say there's another thing. I mean, again, we won't spend that much time on it. People, you know, are talking about personality types, and they're saying certain personality types have a tendency towards conservatism or favoring these kind of, and other personality types are towards liberals. And maybe there's something in a very strict Orthodox dynamic that favors absolutism. And Trump is kind of absolute. I am good. These people are evil. It's something that isn't very variegated. It's not something that's particularly complex. It's something that people can identify with. And perhaps that's somewhat of an explanation. Mitchell?
Yeah, I think if you look at the Orthodox community in America, and again, for, you know, Jews have been in America for a long time. The Orthodox community in America is concerned with one issue mostly, and that's Israel. So that's how they're voting on those issues, Israel. And they are playing out that game and determining which candidate is better. It's not just business, but it's more who's going to be the best for Israel, who's going to support Israel, who's going to not harass Israel, who's going to defend Israel, who's going to fight terror. So he came in with all of his, you know, statements and all of his grandiose statements surrounded by Jewish people, Jewish advisors, Jewish friends, and that made everyone feel comfortable. I think the other thing which Shimon was speaking about a little bit is the character of the Jewish community has changed over the years, over the last 100 years, especially within the Orthodox community. Not only has it become insular, it's become elitist and insular. Mm-hmm. Kids do not go to school, public school. It used to be that there was an ethos to go to public school, mm-hmm, and then learn in a Hebrew school afterwards to integrate in society and community. Now it's a total opposite. You don't want your kids to have anything to do with Little League, with schools, with anyone else.
And the first time they ever meet someone who's a person of color or of a different religion as an equal is in some university campus. And they're not so geared for that. So, you know, that's how they're thinking at this point, is they're insular, this is their community, it starts and ends in the synagogue, in the shul, and that's it. So Trump answers a lot of that.
Go ahead, Shimon.
I like very much what Mitch just said. Something a little complicated that I'm going to try and understand here. I think precisely that those developments in the Orthodox community, the insularity, it's produced, I think, a dumbing down of the Orthodox community. We've become people who are not very interested in very much, very narrowly educating our children and ourselves, and that makes you dumb. Whereas liberal Jews, Reform Jews, unaffiliated Jews, the benefits of being upper middle class Americans who want good educations, get good educations, and they've made much, in my opinion, much smarter choices. I think a pro-Israel choice for Trump is very short-sighted. I don't think he's a trustworthy fellow. I don't think he's a fellow who, you know, who knows what he thinks. I don't think he knows what he thinks from minute to minute, except that he wants what's good for him. So even though I'm very pro-Israel, and I think being pro-Israel is something I would also, in an American election, look for in a candidate. Trump is a dumb choice, it seems to me, a very short-term fix. And it's interesting, the Jews who ostensibly study Torah all day are, in this issue, dumber than Jews who very rarely study Torah, because they've made the Torah such a small, narrow thing. They haven't allowed themselves to make it what it has always been, a Torat Chaim, a Torah that's connected to life, about the world. So it's precisely that insularity, which I think they have achieved, that is dumbing them down in ways that have affected their political decisions.
Okay. A lot of pundits were predicting this would be a disaster for Trump. I don't think we can say it was a disaster given the results. It wasn't obviously great. But the thing that I think was disturbing was that as the election progressed and Trump was doing rally after rally, his main issues revolved around racist themes, basically. There's this caravan, it's coming. These people, without, of course, any facts and just making things up on the fly, it has Middle Easterners, there are terrorists and criminals amongst this caravan trying to frighten people, shipping troops with apparently a reported cost of $250 million to the border to absolutely do nothing when they can't do any policing. It's against U.S. law. He seemed to bring out the worst impulses in Americans, but yet he motivated the base, and in key states they came out for him and supported him. I mean, they could have stayed home. So from his perspective and the Republican perspective, he motivated their base, and it wasn't insignificant. I'm just wondering, from a Jewish point of view, shouldn't that worry Jews potentially in the United States that, instead of having a backlash against him amongst voters, he has a very strong cohort of support, 43% or whatever, of people who strongly support him. And you see the rallies. And there's really been nothing like it in the United States, I think, since people point out the 1930s. Shouldn't Jews in America be worried?
I think we should be very worried. I think these elections are very, very... I'm very pessimistic about what happened yesterday. There was minimal repudiation of Trump's racist tropes and xenophobic tropes and violent tropes. The Democrats won 20-something seats, which is very low for a midterm. I think back in the day with Obama and Clinton, it was in the 50s or 60s. Seats were lost, much bigger numbers.
Right.
And of course, picking up the seats in the Senate. I'm very nervous. I'm not at all encouraged. This is not, as Trump's surrogate said again and again today, this was not a blue wave. As a person, as a Jew, I'm very worried about it, very upset about it. I see America going down a very dark path, and one that is diametrically opposed, and here I'm going to sound not like an Orthodox rabbi, because we've sort of seeded this arena to non-Orthodox people, very much opposed to the basic beliefs, the basic values of Judaism, which is a love for the stranger and caring for the stranger. And I've said and I've written on Facebook to no avail, to so many times, you know, how can children of immigrants and people who are so angry at the way the world didn't take us in the 30s and the 40s, how can we behave this way? And you talk that way, you're like not in the Orthodox consensus, which is Ze Omer Darsheni. It needs some sort of explanation.
Mitch, I just quickly like your opinion on what Shimon said. Is Trump, you know, let's say he gets defeated next election, does this all disappear, or he's kind of unleashed, do you think, as a particularly a pollster and someone who is good at analyzing trends, has he unleashed a dynamic in American society that's going to take a long time to be put back in the bottle?
Well, I'll give him one great compliment. First of all, he may have unleashed a certain anger, meaning there's an anger there. Part of the backlash could be people are tired of political correctness. You know, people are tired of, you know, we're offending this one, offending that one. And there are a lot of people in America, probably in that 43% that said, you know what, no one cares about me. Everyone's saying that I'm not saying the right thing. And they just have a lot of anger built up. So, you know, I think this is going to be unique to him because no one else is going to speak like him, and no one else is going to, you know, be able to reach people like he is. Now, the compliment is, unlike any other president, he's doing an amazing job of communicating directly to the people. He's doing it from his bed at 6 o'clock in the morning with his phone and his Twitter. He doesn't have 10 advisors, you know, checking things, checking for spelling, checking, you know, facts. He says things which are not even true. He exaggerates, embellishes. All that is fine. But the fact of the matter is, when you read his Twitter page, his Twitter feed, you know that that is coming directly from him. That is his thought. Just like each one of us puts stuff out on Facebook or Twitter and sometimes doesn't think about it and sometimes regrets it. He is the same way, but he's the president of the United States. And again, we look at the rallies that he's done. He has gotten tens of thousands of people out in rallies when it's not even election time. Those are people that are getting involved in the political process. Now, we may say that there's some negativity to it because there's anger and he's firing them up. And all that is true. But he's found a new way to communicate directly to people, which doesn't involve polish and speechwriters, the stuff that I have done and do and, you know, try engaging what the people say. And he's just a frank individual, and people like that.
But it doesn't it frighten you? I mean, you know, at the same time, I mean, you could. I mean, I grant you that he is remarkable in his ability to bring out the crowds, to control people, to motivate people. But isn't he a frightening figure? I mean, someone who can, let's say, I mean, it's unprecedented to use the U.S. Army as a prop, right? Just a prop in your election. Call up thousands of troops just to the staging, you know, whatever. I mean, it's just unprecedented, I think, in kind of American society, what's going on.
Well, it's countries do this everywhere. And you know, if I bring it back to Israel, we've run elections on threats that are not real or imagined threats.
The Arabs are streaming to the polls?
Right, the Arabs are streaming to the polls. The Iranian nuclear threat, which they don't have capability. The 23-year-old women, lesbians who won't buy hummus and are being stopped at the airport. These are not real strategic threats, some of them. And they're being used to rally the base. It's the same kind of thing as being done in Israel and elsewhere. When it comes to Trump, there is a problem in that he's saying things that are checked and are not factual. He's attacking the media, meaning you can agree or disagree, and every media, and I've worked with hundreds of different journalists and newspapers, every media organization has their own perspective. But there is something to be said that they are a watchdog on democracy, and they are reporting things that need to be reported. By attacking them, calling them enemy of the people, you know, he's putting them on guard to a certain extent. On the other hand, he's you know, lowering the trust in some of the pillars of democracy and some of the tools that we need to protect our society. So it is very dangerous. I will agree with that. The way he speaks is very dangerous. You know, it brings us back to Mishlei, where it says, Chaim v'mavet b'yad ha-lashon. Death and life are really the power of words. Not just the power of God, it's what you say, it's how you say it. And I think we're seeing with this president that, you know, it's not necessarily a positive. he's communicating with words, but you know, the outcome is not positive in the short term, and it may also have effects in the long term.